So my oldest son, who will be 9 here in a few weeks, he has this thing when something is coming up that he knows is coming, like his birthday, like he wants something for his birthday. Or he just knows that there's something coming up. He'll say, well, this is what I really hope, but I'm not going to hope for it. I don't, because then it won't happen. At 9, he almost 9, he has experienced vast disappointment in his life because he didn't get an iPhone for Christmas. Or actually, it's what he said. He says, "Dad, you know what I want for my birthday? What?" He goes, "I want an iPod Touch or an iPhone." You're not getting an iPhone, but. But so he has this notion, though, that it's almost illegal or wrong to hope because so much of our world is wrapped up in disappointment. Things don't happen the way we'd like them to. This is a day, though, of hope. It's a day where God showers hope upon us. So there was, there's been, a, I have yet to see the movie, although I've read the book, but there's a clip of The Hunger Games that a friend of mine, or I don't really, he's not really a friend of mine, I've never actually met him, but he and I have conversed back and forth via email and Twitter and things. He writes a blog. I write a blog, you know. And so it's like a brotherhood of the bloggers or something. Lutheran pastor bloggers. Yes, stand strong now. And he put a clip up from The Hunger Games. And so it was a clip where the president was speaking to someone. And he says there that hope is a dangerous thing, right? A little bit is okay. But it's to be limited. Too much hope is dangerous. That's the way the world works, right? It limits hope. It trickles it out, lest we begin to think that things might actually be the way they're supposed to be, not the way they are. So very often the world works with fear and has us think of things in scarcity so that it's better just not to hope for them at all. And today God acts exactly the opposite. God breaks open the floodgates of hope for us. Why? That early confession, probably the first confession of Christians, "He is risen." Speaks to completely upend the way the world works. So, if we say that someone is alive, that says something about a future. Someone's alive. They're alive. And we naturally think, well, that means that there's going to be days ahead. There's an implicit future written into that saying, "Rachel is alive." There's a inherent in that, right? My mind blanked. I forgot your name for a minute. I looked. There we are. When we say Brian is dead, we know immediately. That also says something about the future, but a future without. We end up in the midst, when we deal with the death of human beings, we expect there to be life, and we know. We've kind of already treated, we've sanitized it. Death is part of life. We forget that until we are in the middle of it, that death for much of us means it is the end of life with that person. There's no more connection anymore. They are torn out of our lives. We have their memories. We have all that stuff we talk about when people die. Yeah, but they're gone. That relationship is not going to be the same. It is not going to be a mutual relationship anymore. But now to say he is risen is to turn everything upside down, because what is expected is that you die and you don't come back. Jesus breaks that open with something completely and utterly unexpected. He is risen. He has broken through that barrier of death, being raised by the glory of the Father, to open up a new and unexpected future. And this is why it gives us hope. For if we do not need to fear the thing that separates us from each other, that separates us from life, if we know that Christ has defeated it, and through our union with him in the waters of baptism, that we too might be shuttled through that, then what are we to fear? All the fears of the world mean nothing for us anymore. What's the worst you're going to do? Kill me? I can deal with that. When Christ comes and upends the broken world in which we live, dying and rising again, this isn't just something that helps me get to heaven. It's a statement about the cosmic structure of the world, that this one, this Jesus, he's defeated all those fallen powers. He's defeated all of that brokenness. It can't stop him. And because of our union with him, it cannot stop us. We're free. Unbound, unfettered by the fears of scarcity and death and greed and all of that brokenness. To say, you're powerless now. I'll stand against you. We are united into that death in our baptism in the hope, the sure and certain hope that we will be raised with him. Easter is a cosmic thing. All of the brokenness of the world is going to be undone. Jesus is not just the same, he is the promise. That this notion of resurrection is about the hope of the world and how all of this will be made new. Not just like in spring where things die and come back, but seriously and completely new, where all of our expectations are upended. Jesus, Jesus is risen, is cosmic and revolutionary, and speaks to all of our longings that we fear to hope for and would rather cling to the ways of the brokenness, at least because that's expected. Yeah, Pastor, that's all well and good, but that's not the way the world works. No, it's not. It's not at all, and that's the point. Today is a day for us to stand. That when we proclaim, Alleluia, Christ is risen, it is a message to the world that as he is risen, all that brokenness is disarmed. let us go out in all of that dangerous hope to proclaim the mighty proclamation. Alleluia. Christ is risen.
He is risen indeed. Alleluia.